On this edition of Our Town, we're going to talk about the Dune Restoration Project. And joining me today is Andy Vibora, Bill Blackwell, and Lisa Romano's with us by telephone. Good day to everybody.
Good day.
Thanks for having us.
Well, awesome. It's wonderful. I was talking with Dina Pavlis, and she said, you know, it might be a great idea to have you guys come in here and talk about the Dune Restoration, and maybe educate me. And while you're educating me, you can also educate the folks out there as to what needs to be happening around here. What exactly is going on with the dunes that there needs to be restoration? Bill?
Well, in the 30s and 40s and probably even before, we started planting European beech grass to protect Highway 101, cities, towns, jetties. And unfortunately, it spread very well and became very established and right now, it's actually threatening the dunes. There isn't as much open sand as there has been historically.
So did they not recognize that this might be so invasive that it would just take over, or was it?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, it worked really well, but they had no idea that it would work as well as it does.
I know, like the East Coast has their kudzu.
Yes.
They have that problem here, and then we have the grass here that's invading it. So during this project, what is actually done? Do you actually have to harvest and unroot all this grass, Andy? Or is this a Bill question?
Well, I mean, I think either any of us can probably touch on that, but I think there have been a number of methods. You mentioned pulling, but I know Bill would say that that's not very effective just because of the structure of the grass itself and how it grows.
You just can't get all the roots.
Right.
There's no way.
Yeah, it spreads really quickly. So it really becomes kind of a mechanical process, working with the Forest Service, bulldozing, burning, in some cases spraying, and a combination of all those things to really kind of get a handle and try to restore some of the dunes that have been taken over.
I read something, and maybe it was a misread on my part, but someone had written an article said in order to save the dunes, sometimes you have to move the dunes. Is that something that's part of what has to go on here?
Well, that's what we're trying to do is to get the dunes to move again. The dunes live by the open sand areas. They change daily and seasonally, and that's the magic of the dunes. And so if we can get rid of the European beach grass and Scotch broom and gorse and get the sand moving again, then that restores the ecological processes.
Now, Lisa, what is your part in the dune restoration process?
So I am a member of the Oregon Dunes Restoration Collaborative Group, of which Andy and Bill are also members. And the Forest Service helps convene this group of interested stakeholders back in 2014, when a lot of people were starting to talk about the fact that there needed to be a large-scale effort to save the dunes, to restore the dunes. And so the Forest Service role in that collaborative is to provide technical support to the group as they try to figure out what maybe the best strategy would be and what the priorities are for saving the dunes. And since we are not the only, but probably the primary land manager of the Oregon Dunes, we have a role in helping figure out, what we can and can't do out there. And we've got our specialists in botany and wildlife and ecology and lots of other fields to kind of support the whole process.
That's cool. Now, when I go down, like, say, to the South Jetty here and you go over one sand dune, then there's a bunch of growth there. Is that the grass that we're talking about? Is that some of the stuff that needs to be gotten rid of, Bill?
That's right. It's and especially at South Jetty, the beach grass is really thick. And originally, the dunes, as they came up from the ocean, were very not tall, like 5 or 6 feet. And as you know, at South Jetty, it's more like 20 or 30 feet. And what's happened is the beach grass catches the sand, it builds up that foredune, but the beach grass is so tenacious, it just comes up through the sand. It really enjoys being buried, and then it comes back through, and so that's how that foredune has built up.
So in the sand there, there's this weaving of roots and everything that's actually holding it all together and keeping it from moving properly.
That's right, and those roots can go 20 feet deep. And so even if you tried to dig it out, it'll just come back from the roots, the rhizomes.
So what is the prognosis then for getting this fixed, Andy?
Well, it's going to take a lot of work, and I think that's the exciting part about the collaborative coming together and putting together a strategic plan And when most people hear about strategic plans, they probably shudder and think, you know, oh my gosh, here's this tome that I'm going to have to read. But Lisa and the rest of the collaborative that's been working on this for many years now has put together a strategic plan in a coffee table book with a lot of pictures, not a lot of text. And so this document really is something that people can learn from, learn what the priorities are for the collaborative, and then get involved if they want to. And that's what we're hoping.
Has there been any negative feedback about doing this? Are people, you know, people saying, well, why now? Or
not to my knowledge.
No, and I think that's the other part of it. I was asked this in an interview earlier this morning over in Eugene about, you know, is this a new thing? And it's not. I mean, people like Bill, people like the Forest Service, other interested individuals and groups have been working on this problem for a long time and deserve a lot of credit, you know, even working within the school systems to educate the kids about this issue. So it's been going on over time. This is the first time, again, through this collaborative process where all of a sudden you have OHV writers in the room with environmentalists, with individuals who in the past you maybe wouldn't see in the same room. And so that's the power of this collaborative coming together with this simple goal of restoring these processes and preserving what's out there now so we can all enjoy it, so our kids can enjoy it and our grandkids can enjoy it.
Now, it seems like, and I may be wrong because I'm not as familiar with other states, but it seems like Oregon has a very strong invasive species regulatory system set up now. Is that part of because of what's happened with the dunes and the invasive plants there?
I don't know. Lisa, do you think about that?
I was afraid you were going to ask me. You know, I really can't speak to that. What I can say is that there is a new effort. Let me start over. The dunes area has been designated as a cooperative weed management area, and that is in recognition of the fact that there are some special, it's a special place that needs some special attention when it comes to managing invasive species, and it's also recognition of the need to bring together lots of different partners to try to tackle the effort, and so we're pleased that that group is also working with the collaborative group. There's a lot of overlap in the membership, and it'll just help bring some more resources to this effort.
Sounds like a project of this size like really has no end date. Is that accurate?
That is probably accurate. As you heard earlier, it takes a lot of work to remove these invasive species. And we can't just go in once and pull a bunch of weeds and be done with it. It requires going back over and over again just to knock back what's there and then ongoing maintenance probably in perpetuity to keep places free of invasive species. And it's a really big area. The collaborative group identified a swath of about 50 miles from just north of Florence down to Coos Bay that deserves some level of restoration. So we're looking at this as a decades-long effort, if not longer. And, you know, we're going to, working with the collaborative group, figure out what the low-hanging fruit is and figure out, you know, what the critical needs are to identify first. But we're thinking that this is a long-haul effort.
How has the invasiveness of these plants changed sort of the animal habitats there? I imagine that, you know... when animals that burrow into the sand, they probably don't want to go into this area with grass. Has that changed a lot over since this became a problem?
Well, one example is the western snowy plover. Before the foredune and the beach grass became established, their nesting habitat was probably about 700 feet wide next to the ocean. And currently it's about 100 feet wide. And that bird, seabird, is listed as threatened on the endangered species list. And so that's one example of where wildlife has been harmed by the establishment of beach grass. There are predators such as coyotes and other animals can hide in the beach grass. And so it takes a lot of effort on the Forest Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service part to keep that species going. And so they've worked hard doing that, and so that's another reason to try to take this effort on.
Well, I've only been with the collaborative for a couple of years, and so it's all kind of a steep learning curve for me. But what I found really interesting is, you know, we've been talking a lot about the grass, but once that grass gets established, then these other plants come in, and pretty soon you have a forest out there. And there's a lot of discussion about a marten that most people would think live in the forest now lives down in these forests on the dunes. And so it just complicated the kind of challenges that the collaborative and the Forest Service and everybody is working on. Now all of a sudden we have this animal living down there that's not traditionally kind of in that dunes area.
So migrated to that area because the food supply and everything seemed to be there.
I think that's still being studied exactly why and how it got there. So now it lives in those forests along there and kind of scurries between those kind of forested areas to compete for food.
Now, is this project predominantly or is it set to be a non-chemical extraction? I mean, or do they have to use some sort of chemicals to help get rid of this too?
Well, go ahead, Lisa.
So in the past, we have done some herbicide treatments out there, and we are currently in the process of doing some planning to implement some of the strategy that the collaborative groups developed. So we're in what's called the NEPA process, the National Environmental Policy Act process, where we'll be doing an environmental analysis to study potential effects of proposed treatments. And we're still in a very early stages of that, but we will be looking at using the whole suite of tools, which is mechanical, burning, and potentially some really targeted herbicide application, delivered by hand, not like aerial application.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a non-chemical guy myself, but I can also see the fact that for a long-term effect, it would be worse not having the dunes put back in place than a temporary, maybe herbicidal issue that comes up from that. Is that fair?
And that's part of the environmental analysis. It's going to be looking at all these different, you know, all these different potential impacts of no action versus different types of action, and just trying to figure out what the best solution is. And we're doing that with a lot of public input and input from the collaborative group as well.
And that public input, everybody, all your listeners should know that we've developed a website and materials to educate people about this. And on our website, we have news tabs, events tabs. And on that news tab right now is a document that the Forest Service put out that people can learn about this and then comment on some of the proposed action. So it's a great place for people to keep aware of what the collaborative is doing and become educated.
Where are you guys currently working now? Is this a time of year when you can do this, or does it have to be done at a certain time of year?
Right now, with winter and bad weather, there's no activities right this minute. But one of the partners in the collaborative is Save the Riders Dunes, and they're going to have a work party the last weekend in April. And if you go to our website, saveoregondunes.org, under events, you can find out information on that and where they can sign up to take part in that. And as the weather gets better, we're going to have more work parties, both in non-motorized and motorized areas of the Oregon Dunes. And we'd encourage folks to come out and help us. We in the past have worked north of Florence and Hasita Dunes, removing Scotch Broom. And over the last 4 years, and it's taken 4 years to do it, but we have cleared probably, I would guess, 20 or 30 acres of land.
That's a good start. Now, because of the temperatures and the wetness that we have here, does this grass have a dormancy period where it's better to work on it, or is it just pretty much growing all the time?
Personally, I think that you would probably want to look at your control methods. You know, when is it best to run a bulldozer or excavator, or when is the best time to burn? You know, there's specific seasons for that. That I think the grass is going to be there, you know, 365 days out of the year.
Right.
So I think, you know, when the best times for treatment would be more critical.
So you mentioned the website. You also the book. How can people get a copy of the book if they'd like that?
Well, that's one of the things we're still trying to figure out the best way to distribute. We printed a limited copy, and we're making it available for a suggested $5 donation. We don't necessarily want to be mailing one to each person. So I think as we sign up to do more things like the Florence Home Show, I think we're going to want to figure out how best to do that. But again, through the website, people can sign up to be on a mailing list. If they have that request, they can certainly make that request, and we'll try to accommodate those. The other thing is it's on the website as a flip book, so people can go right to the website and flip right through it right on their computer, and they can also download a PDF right from the site if they wanted to. So there's a couple of ways for people to be able to view that.
Is the collaborative something that could use some financial help from folks if they wanted to help support this? How would that happen?
Well, we have a grants committee. So far, we've gotten two grants. Bill wrote one, and I wrote one, and that was really to develop the collateral materials and start getting the word out. So we've got some great materials now. We've got some stand-up banners. That was a Travel Oregon grant, so we were really appreciative of that. And then one through the, was that the Forest Service, Bill?
It was Forest Service retirees called Old Smokies.
All right. So we've gotten a little bit of money to kind of get our materials put together. We'll be getting those spread out throughout the communities all up and down the Dunes area. So we've got stand-up banners that'll, again, direct people to the website for more information. We've got brochures and rack cards and table tents that we're going to try to get out in some of the restaurants. And then we'll circulate this material around in terms of the banners in some high traffic areas. And then we'll be at things like the home show, maybe the roadie days.
Roadie days, yeah. That'd be cool.
So,
and Power of Florence.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
In the summer.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the money we've gotten so far, and we've burned right through that pretty quickly, getting all of this website and materials put together. So there is a donation tab on the website. We are not a 501c3. We have fiscal oversight by Cascade Pacific, R, C, and D, and they help facilitate the collaborative process, and they are a 501c3. So people can donate. There's a form.
Donate, designate, so they can donate to that and designate to.
Exactly. Okay. And we're working with them to make that process a lot easier. Right now, it's, you know, you fill out a form and you send them a check, but we're working on an automated way for people to be able to do that.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that we need to let people know? Lisa, do you have anything else you want to share?
I think everyone covered the high points. Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
So I just say, folks, go visit SaveOregonDunes.org and just go through the different tabs and come help us at a work party.
All right, Lisa Romano, Bill Blackwell, and Indy Vapora, thank you so much for being here today, and much success with this. I'd like to see the dunes get back to where they're supposed to be.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
And that's Our Town for the month of March. Tune in the first Wednesday of every month for another edition of Our Town. I'm your host, George Henry, on Coast Radio.